This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Schwarzenegger administration appears to be poised to give its approval to the use of methyl iodide, which California's $2 billion strawberry industry wants to use to sterilize the soil before plants go in. Currently, the industry relies on methyl bromide, which is being phased out as a result of an international treaty set up to protect the ozone layer. Methyl iodide appears to be the only pesticide alternative, and lab tests have demonstrated that methyl iodide can cause miscarriages and thyroid cancer. And though the research is less well-developed, quite possibly also cause irreversible brain damage. So what needs to be done with methyl iodide to protect farm workers and others who are exposed? We take that up in this forum segment. And joining us in studio is Amy Standen, who has been covering the story and covering it quite well, I might add, science and environmental reporter for Quest, KQED Public Radio. Good morning, Amy.
Hi.
Well, let's begin by talking about just how dangerous it is. I mean, we're not talking about people eating strawberries and getting sick here.
No, we're not. And I'm glad you brought that up right at the top. The primary concern with methyl iodide is for farm workers. So the people who would actually handle the chemical, but also people who are working in fields nearby and people who live nearby. And because strawberries are grown in coastal parts of California, there are a lot of communities and homes and schools that are, you know, border right up against strawberry fields.
So we have to decide just how much they have to be protected, really.
Exactly. And whether that's possible.
And whether it's even possible.
Yes, exactly.
Of course, is it possible to use something other than one of these pesticides, other than a fumigant?
Well, of course. I mean, if you talk to organic strawberry growers, they say, come on, people. We have to move past fumigation completely. Organic growers don't use fumigants, methyl bromide, or would they use methyl iodide? And they say, you know, they come up with a perfectly good strawberry. What the strawberry researchers say and what the conventional strawberries growers say is that if you do not use fumigation, you lose about half your strawberries. So yes, you come up with perfectly good strawberries, but they're smaller and there are somewhere around half as many. So that's why organic strawberries cost more.
And a greater longevity to those strawberries where you do use the fumigant.
That's what they say.
Strawberry fields forever.
Right, exactly.
Something like that. And there are also 50,000 jobs at stake here.
That's what the California Department of Food. That's the estimate. That's sort of a worst case scenario estimate. I mean, again, the organic growers would say, well, you need more workers to tend to a field that is grown organically, so you would make up for those jobs. But conventional strawberry growers get paid. I've talked to them, and they get paid. It's kind of like being a waiter at a restaurant. They get paid for how many strawberries they pick. So they get sort of a small hourly wage, but then most of their pay is on the bulk of strawberries. And organic strawberries are, you know, they're farther apart, there's fewer of them, and they're smaller. So it would be hard, at least initially, for strawberry farmers to do as well, you know, to make as much money as they make now.
And, you know, I was getting a picture as you were describing in my mind about the fact, I remember I was saying to Judy Campbell before we went on the air and Dan Zoll that, I remember interviewing Dolores Huerta of the Farm Workers Union, and her saying that this is probably the hardest and most strenuous, onerous work of all farm working.
It's back-breaking work. I mean, I think a lot of us have seen them. If you drive down Route 1 past, Watsonville and through Salinas, I mean, these are people who are bending over all day. And because it's work that requires you to be really low, it's work that a lot of women do. And that's important in this debate because women, as with any job, tend to work through the early stages of their pregnancy. I talked to a woman, strawberry field worker, who worked through, I think, the first 5 or 6 months of her pregnancy, and she says that's really typical. And of course, with methyl iodide, some of the scariest effects, I guess I don't want to say scariest, but it's sort of...
It kills fetuses.
It kills fetuses, and it may also do brain damage to fetus. So there are real concerns here about things like, lowering the IQ of a baby before it's even born. Yet brain damage that might not be so obvious as a miscarriage and might take years to detect. And again, it's not just the women who are pregnant and working in the fields. There are schools that have sports fields that are literally 10 feet away from strawberry fields, and you have little league teams out there playing and kids breathing hard and sucking up lots of air. And so you would worry about those kids, too.
We need to do more research to really know incontrovertibly how dangerous this neurotoxin is.
Yes.
But we know that it does brain damage. Right?
We know that it is a neurotoxin in adults. We know that it causes miscarriages. So what the scientists I talked to said, well, if it can
And thyroid cancer.
It's a carcinogen, and we know it causes miscarriages. And so the scientists say, well, if it causes miscarriages and it causes brain damages, we know it's affecting the fetus. Therefore, why wouldn't it? They say it's predictive that it would also affect the brain of a developing fetus.
Chris, where we get into some difficulties here is what is dangerous.
Yes.
There's this whole scientist panel that decided that 0.8 parts per billion represents danger, but the EPA much different figure than that.
Much higher than that. Right. Under the Bush administration in 2007, methyl iodide was approved by the EPA. And right around that time, there was a letter sent by 54 scientists, six or seven of them Nobel laureates, saying, don't approve this chemical. But methyl iodide was indeed approved. But California has its separate process. That's why we're going through this now. And so, yes, but you're right. The EPA's levels are much, much higher than what California would adopt. And that's what the DPR, you know, they say, hey, our levels are so much more conservative.
The Department of Pesticide Regulation.
I'm sorry. Yeah, yes, that's what I've gotten too into the lingo here. Yes, the Department of Pesticide Regulations points to those federal levels and says, hey, we're much more conservative than
And the scientists say, who are they to tell us what is right by our lights, right?
They say this is the science. Yeah. We're not telling you whether to approve the chemical or not. We're saying this is what could be an acceptable level.
And Quest got a hold of an email.
Quest got a hold of an email. Yeah, we did a Public Records Act request for correspondence that might have happened. The question that I had was, you have scientists saying 0.8 parts per billion is acceptable, and then you have the managers, sort of the administrative part of the Department of Pesticide Regulation, saying 96 parts per billion is acceptable, and that's a 120-fold difference. So, and there was very little, you know, about two paragraphs explanation for what had changed between those two numbers. So my question was, what's going on here? And one of the things that turned up was an email that came from a scientist who works inside the Department of Pesticide Regulations. And these are not people who I had access to. And she is saying, essentially, we did not sign off on that 96. We had nothing to do with it. And it was not explained to us how those numbers were reached.
And these are scientists who are pretty bona fide. I mean, members of the National Academy and so forth, yeah?
Well, it's a little, I'm talking about, we have two groups of scientists here. So we have a group of staff scientists inside the Department of Pesticide Regulations, and then we have an
I was alluding to the panel.
The panel, right. Okay, that's right, what I'm getting. So we have a panel of external scientists that was brought in by the regulators, by the state, to sort of double check the science. And those are the scientists, there are eight of them that I've been talking to. I've spoken with all eight. And they're at UCLA, they're at the National Institutes of Health, they're at Boston University, they're at UC Berkeley. I mean, these are eminent scientists, and they have unanimously said that they feel their work has been ignored and that these levels are not safe.
Talking to Quest Science and Environment reporter Amy Standen, and I wanted to read a statement that was put out from the Department of Pest Regulation, who were unavailable to join us today. They declined by lack of being available, but they did send us a statement. And here's what they say. No pesticide has been evaluated more than methyl iodide in the history of the Department of Pesticide Regulation. The department has proposed registration of methyl iodide because it is concluded through an unprecedented level of evaluation to ensure it can be used safely with the strict safeguards proposed. Risk assessment and risk management are two separate processes at the department that are conducted by different staff to preserve scientific independence. Risk assessments are not designed or intended to recommend registration decisions or risk mitigation options. This is the role of risk managers. Risk managers are charged with understanding and managing the risk associated with the use of any particular pesticide. In that capacity, they considered and were informed by the health protective conclusions independently reached by the risk assessors. That assessment is the point of departure for the risk management decision. However, risk managers can weigh the risks in light of many factors, including an understanding of the degree of uncertainty built into the approach taken by the risk assessors, the opinion of other scientists engaged in risk assessment, and the availability of measures that can be implemented to mitigate the risks to a level where there is no likelihood of harm. The risk managers in this case believe that the proposed restrictions will allow methyl iodide to be used safely. And that's, of course, their bottom line. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, isn't it, that distinction between risk assessment and risk management?
I'm glad I'm not. Yes, it sounds, I mean, in listening to you read it, it sounds kind of technical. But
bureaucratic, too.
And bureaucratic, yeah. Exactly. The distinction between risk managers and risk assessors is really central to this. Risk assessors are the scientists. Risk managers are the people, the administrative part of the agency that says we're going to approve methyl iodide or not. And they also get to decide, here are the ways that you can use it. You know, workers will have to use respirators and buffer zones. They set the conditions.
Tarps, too.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Mitigations, they're called. And this is, it's an important distinction because it is not the job of scientists to make recommendations about whether or not the chemical can be approved. And the scientists I spoke to were very clear on that. What they say, though, is that it is not the job of the managers to change the science. And that is what they say has happened here. That's, of course, the difference between the 0.8 and the 96. They say the managers changed the science, the calculations for what is deemed safe, and that is not their job.
Well, we're talking about something that is really of concern, and not only to farm workers, but to people who are near strawberry fields and so forth. And it's a big and in many ways vexing question, and many of you may have questions and comments. And so if you do, we welcome your phone calls. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we invite your calls. You're cordially invited to participate with any questions or comments you might have. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. That's our toll-free number. Again, the number for your calls, and we welcome them, is 866-733-6786. If you have questions or comments, you can also email them to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. And again, California is set to approve a pesticide for strawberries. It would allow workers to be exposed to the chemical at levels roughly 120 times higher than what state scientists say is safe. And methyl iodide, which is a carcinogen, is also linked, as we've said, to miscarriages and neurological problems. And critics say that the fumigant is far too dangerous for farm workers. Amy Standen is here with us, science and environmental reporter for Quest, for KQED Public Radio. And we're going to go forthwith to your calls and emails. The sense of managers trying to essentially dictate what is right and wrong based on their assessments, I mean, getting some real hostility from the scientists on this, aren't we?
And I was really struck by that. I'm a science reporter. I talk to scientists all the time. And what you usually hear from scientists are very measured, you know, sort of non-emotional tones. And almost from the get-go, I told you I spoke to all eight of the members of this panel. They were incensed. And I don't think that's too strong of a word to use. They used words like horrified, baffled, shocked, to describe what had happened in this case. There was one scientist, a guy named Ron Melnick, is with the National Institutes of Health, and he's also on the advisory board for the EPA. This is a very, you know, an eminent scientist who has also done many of these assessments before. This is something he gets, you know, asked to do a lot. He said he's never seen anything like this. As a reporter, that's just, it's striking language to hear.
Let's hear from our listeners and what you have to say. And we go first to Yayoi, is that right?
Yes. I'm calling from Granite Bay, California, and my home is right abuts a strawberry field. And I'm very, very worried because in the past they've used the other fumigant, methylbromide, and we evacuated our property while they were doing that.
And that's pretty nasty too, by the way.
It's nasty, and we're very upset about it. I can see the strawberry field right from our home. And quote-unquote, you know, Granite Bay is supposed to be a fairly affluent community, but these people think that this chemical is going to be used way in the isolated areas of the Central Valley. No, it's in our backyards, all throughout the Sacramento area. So I think it's of great concern to everyone. And I'm very alarmed, and I'd like to know what I can do to stop it, at least being used in residential areas.
Well, before we ask Amy that question, what about the sense of residential areas and how perilous or how concerned they ought to be?
Sure. Well, like methyl bromide, there, if methyl iodide is approved, there would be a buffer zone. So that's what the caller is referring to. There's a when the chemical is sprayed, and this is not something that happens every day or even month. It's before the plants go in, so it's about once a year per acre. There would be an evacuation, and people would have to leave within a certain buffer zone. And, you know, the Department of Pesticide Regulation says that will protect residents from this. That was an interesting call to get because it reminded me that what's interesting about strawberry fields is that we worry, of course, about the farm workers. But over the last couple decades, we've seen people, and as she said, you know, these are middle class, upper middle class families moving into areas that are near strawberry fields. And so you have people concerned about this that we wouldn't have heard from, you know, 30, 40 years ago. The sort of the neighbors of agriculture.
She also asked, what can I do?
Mm-hmm. There's a public, we're in the middle of a public comment period that ends on June 29th. And if you go to the Department of Pesticide Regulations homepage, you'll find links that'll take you to, you know, tell you how to submit comments. There's also a hearing on this on June 17th, sponsored by Senator Flores, Dean Flores.
Thank you for your call, Yayoi. We appreciate hearing from you. We'll go to more of your calls. We'll go to Zarik in San Mateo. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wondering, I just want to say, who is EPA to tell people that to use methyl iodide at that much, you know, concentration? Because I think essentially it comes down to the local residents or people who are living the strawberry field to decide what kind of chemicals that should be used in a particular area. So I was just going to say there should be some kind of local force to enforce that rather than from centralized government to tell that much is allowed and that much is not, kind of, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't like the EPA dictating policy when it has effect or impact on local residents. You want to say something?
Well, I would say the EPA also dictates a lot of policies that protect people. One thing I wanted to say about the EPA that I didn't get a chance to mention earlier is that, as I said, in the statement you read, the regulators often point to those EPA numbers and say, hey, we're better than that. In September, there was a hearing about this in Sacramento. The panel, the scientific panel that we've been talking about, brought a bunch of people to learn more about methyl iodide. And the U.S. EPA sent two of its representatives to California. And the testimony of this is really interesting. They say, we're here because we want to see what California does with methyl iodide. Because if California, I'm paraphrasing here, but if California does not approve methyl iodide, we might be interested in our own reassessment of the chemical. And then they say this comes from the very highest levels of the agency. So
does this mean we're the coal mine or the canary?
I think what it means is that there is a chemical that was approved during the Bush administration that the Obama administration seems to feel differently about and seems to be looking for an opportunity to rethink its own acceptance of methyl iodide.
Well, let me thank the caller. And I want to move to more of your calls here. Jeff, join us. Hi.
Hi. I seem to remember that methyl bromide was... when there was discussion about methyl bromide and methyl iodide, that even though methyl iodide is heavier molecular weight, that they're both administered as a gas. And there was some discussion about the gases, even though they may be heavy, getting into the upper atmosphere, and methyl iodide perhaps being a much worse ozone depleter than methyl bromide was. And I was curious if you know anything about that.
I haven't heard that. That may be true. I'm not sure.
We thank you for your call. Actually, you want to go to some of the emails here. This is a listener, and you could have expected this, Robert, who writes, my wife and I will only buy organic strawberries, even at higher initial cost. This is because of concern of poisoning the workers, the land, and the overall environment. The cost of buying conventional strawberries is much higher in the long run. It's time we all stop long-term destruction for short-term gain. Another listener writes, methyl bromide is extremely toxic. How does iodide compare? How many workers have gotten sick from bromide? Do we know?
I don't know how many workers have gotten sick from methyl bromide. I know that the health, there have been plenty of complaints about methyl bromide. There is another chemical that's used with it called chloropicrin, which is actually nerve gas, and that would be the same with methyl iodide too. This opens up a whole other can of worms, but the point is that people get sick from chloropicrin sometimes. Workers get sick, and it's not always clear responding to. Yeah. I know that the health concerns about methyl iodide are significantly greater than with methyl bromide.
Here's a listener named David who writes, I understand it. Both methyl bromide and methyl iodide act, as I understand, act by sterilizing the soil completely. A possible replacement mentioned is pumping steam into the soil to kill nematodes, which sounds crazily energy intensive. Is it true that our current strains of strawberries are so fragile that they require a near sterile environment to grow in? Is anyone working on GMO strawberries that won't require these types of drastic pesticides and huge energy usage?
Strawberries in California are a $2 billion industry. California supplies 90% of the country's strawberries. I mean, this is a huge part of the California economy. If you think about the average, just to throw in some trivia here, the average American eats 8 pounds of strawberries a year, and 90% of those come from California. So I say that because there are lots of people working very hard to find not just alternatives to methyl bromide, but alternatives to methyl iodide, too. And that includes trying to breed strains of strawberries that are resistant to different kinds of pests. You certainly can. I mean, you can grow strawberries.
You can do a genetically modification, can't you?
Sure. Yeah. I'm no expert on that. But the people are trying to figure this out. And you can grow strawberries like any other plant. You can grow strawberries in any kind of soil. The problem is you just get a lot fewer strawberries. Just to be clear, I mean, methyl iodide iodide and N-methyl bromide, these are fumigants that could be used on many different crops. It's not just a strawberry crop, but they're very expensive chemicals and they're expensive to use because of the buffer zones, the tarps, all of these things. And that's why we tend to see them in crops like strawberries, which are just really high. They're just expensive crops.
The problem is they go in the soil and they also come up.
Exactly. They go into the soil as a liquid, usually through the drip irrigation system, and then they gasify pretty quickly. And I think one of the other callers mentioned that even though they're heavy, they tend to gasify and disperse into the air pretty quickly.
And we'll disperse into more of your calls, so to speak. Justin, hi. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, how are you? I was wondering how we know that methyl iodide is safe if it's consumed. Is it just only a risk if it's inhaled? Is it only a neurotoxin if it's inhaled?
I don't want to say that methyl iodide cannot contaminate a strawberry that you would eat in a grocery store.
But I read somewhere that it would take about 7,000 servings or something.
Thank you.
Like that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, you know, scientists don't prove negatives. And I think the science on that, I mean, is not really there yet. Methyl iodide is not really used very much in the country. It's in use in a couple places. But California would be the real test in a large scale sense of this chemical. We don't know that it can't affect strawberry eaters, but strawberry growers are at a much greater risk.
Do you remember the cranberry scare, or do you read about the cranberry scare? I'm a little older than you are, but it was proof that cranberries were somewhat carcinogenic, but it would take tons,
yes,
literally, of cranberries to have any of that kind of effect. And we go to more of your calls. I'm sorry, Daria, is it?
Daria,
sorry.
Hi.
I
have a similar question to a couple of previous callers and emails about how dangerous the bromides are versus iodide. I understand that bromide uptake in your thyroid is preferential to iodide. So is it just a lesser of two evils?
I think the scientists that I spoke to would disagree with that and say that methyl iodide is a much scarier carcinogen than methyl bromide. I mean, when scientists handle methyl iodide in a lab, they use a fume hood, which means there is air suction away from them. They use double gloves. They're often behind glass, and they're dealing with about a teaspoon or half an ounce of methyl iodide. Those are not, as far as I know, the kinds of precautions that are taken for handling methyl bromide, although that, too, you know, is a serious chemical.
But again, we should mention that methyl bromide was cut out because of the ozone layer.
Exactly. The reason methyl bromide has been phased out is because it damages the ozone layer, not because it damages human health.
We thank the caller, and we go to more of your calls. We'll go next to Joan. Hi, Joan. You're on forum.
Hi. I wanted to just mention, I've agreed with everything, all the questions and all the comments, and I just wanted to take this on a larger kind of symbolic level and comment that we're talking about agribusiness, we're talking about big corporations, and we can just see it everywhere in this country, how human health is sacrificed to the almighty dollar. And here we're talking about California becoming a guinea pig for this chemical about which not much is known. As you said, the children's fetal brains, we won't know whether there's damage or even be able to prove damage from this methyl iodide, and as well as the children who are alive and already born and playing in fields next to the strawberry fields. So I think that something that is so risky should not be inflicted upon the population.
Hi, Joan, I appreciate that. We'll take that as an editorial comment, and we'll go to another caller from Berkeley. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thank you. Quick comment, just in reference to the expert panel report. It's an excellent read, and it's a remarkable read from scientists, for being so concise. And I think the one thing that jumps out for me in that report that's really important to consider is the whole risk assessment in this regards to the workers is based on a whole series of assumptions that a number of very complicated safety procedures are going to be in place. And I think a number of workers testified to that panel that it's simply the reality of life in the field is all those little measures coming together all at one time are unlikely. And it's just unfortunate that, again, that we, you know, want to set up a system that is clearly going to impact workers. And I appreciate the comment from the individual who said They're sticking to organic, and so is my family. Thank you.
Okay, we thank you for the call, Amy.
That brings up a really interesting point. Up until now, we've been talking about how toxic methyl iodide is. But there's another part of this, too, which is the part of the mitigations. Can it? Yes, okay, it's toxic. Can it be used safely? Approval of methyl iodide would come with a long list of things that farmers have to do. They have to use buffer zones. They have to make their workers wear respirators and so on. The problem is that in the real world, this stuff often works and sometimes doesn't work too. And there are plenty of examples of this. Respirators, for instance, the agency assumes in their calculations that respirators will cut back on 90% of the exposure that a farm worker uses. In real life, it's more like 50. Respirators don't work well if the person wearing them has a beard. They don't work well if the person is really sweaty. We're in working in fields here. They don't work, of course, if you take them off to smoke a cigarette or tell the guy next to you, it's time for lunch.
Plus, you have a lot of contradictory data. I mean, a figure like 90% can be a result of some experiments, but not others.
There's actually been a lot of research.
Close empirical research on this?
The close empirical research, as I understand it, does not take you to 90%. It takes you to 50%.
That's what I would assume.
Yeah, the more conservative number. I mean, that respirators just, there's so many ways.
I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt for coming up with such a high number because it does seem extraordinarily high.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry.
The 90%.
The 90% is the figure that the agency said believe respirators can cut back. In other words, if you wear a respirator, you'll get 10% of the exposure. And that, it seems to be, is optimistic, to say the least. And then, of course, things like buffer zones, tarps blow up, or the edge sort of comes up and fumes escape, or there could be holes in them. There's just all kinds of things that can go wrong. And there was a really interesting, the caller referred to some of the testimony that happened in September. They actually brought in a farm worker, a man who was someone who handles fumigants. So this was a man who works with methyl bromide in the field. And the scientist said, "Oh, well, do you wear a mask?" And he said, "Well, of course I wear a mask." And they said, "Well, what kind of mask is it?" And he said, "Oh, it's white and, I put it over my nose." And they said, "Well, at the end of the day, do you keep it? Do you change the canisters or what?" And he says, "Oh, well, I throw it away." Point is that this was a man who was wearing the kind of paper mask you might wear if you were sanding, a chair. This is not a respirator. In fact, it's a mask that could trap fumes and actually make things worse.
Looks like this is going to be approved, though, doesn't it?
It's set to be approved.
At
yeah, we'll see.
And we're going to get more reporting on this, on safety measures, on Monday from
yes.
you. Amy Sandin, thank you, and congratulations for all the good work you've done.
Thank you.
She's science environmental reporter for Quest for KQED Public Radio, and we thank you for being with us. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. We're going to talk about faith and God and subjects like that in the hour ahead. I hope you'll join us for that. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.